The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Listen, you come to town, I want to give you your first lesson.
My folks had a house in Fire Island, and there's a whole different type of jiu-jitsu that goes on out there.
So, Jimmy does that.
Yeah.
Jimmy's a fucking red belt.
It's where you don't tap when you're being choked. Yeah.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. We have an interesting guest today, too. We're going to start right with our guest because he is in the waiting room, and we always hate to make a guy wait. I love when we have friends on, when two of my friends meet. Comedian who's really, really great, Andrew Schultz. He has a special on Netflix called Schultz Saves America. It was a four-part special, not traditional stand-up, but he's very, very good, not just at doing Instagram, but he's doing his own talk show on Instagram, and it's really great. I'm not sure if he can hear us yet. Andrew, can you hear us?
I can hear you, man. How you doing, boys?
Hi, buddy. How are you?
Nice to meet you, bro. I love your setup.
Thank you, man. This is the new Miami studio. Check it out. I guess you can't really see it that much.
Yeah, yeah. Are you in Miami?
Yeah, we moved down here for a few months.
It's a nice life, right? Just to say, fuck it, I'm going to go to Miami for a few months and broadcast in the warm weather. That's a nice thing to do.
Bro, it's good to be rich. Did you know that?
No.
Oh, shit. You
know, listen, I'm just finding out about this, but it's kind of sick when you're rich, Jim.
No, I don't know, unfortunately.
Jimmy, I see your
I've seen your house. That's lies, Jim. I've seen your house. You got some money.
I seen it too. It's true. Let me ask you about that Joker in your
right
shoulder. Did you like the movie or?
Yeah, the movie was sick, but honestly, it was just like we're in this space called Ampersand Studios down here, and there's this like art dealer that just has a lot of this art around the space, and we walked and we just saw it, and we were like, "Can we put that in the studio?" And he was like, "Yeah, sure." So we have this one, we have this other one. It looks like we commissioned these; they didn't. They could leave at any point in time, but for the meantime, yeah, we got some sick art in the studio.
It looks cool, man.
Yeah.
The only thing we paid for is the wallpaper from Amazon.
You bought the wallpaper.
We bought the wallpaper.
Well, Jimmy's going to compliment you on your microphone in a second.
I will. I always compliment Andrew, but Andrew, I'm not surprised. I mean, he has a professional studio. He's like a mogul. He does his own shit. So, but when other guests have a good mic, I'm surprised. But with Andrew, I kind of expect it.
We had to come correct, man. We had to come correct. All right. I'm very excited to be on the show. I've been watching you guys do this for a while now. So it's cool to finally be here.
And I see you've been hanging out with Anthony Cumia, I guess. What am I looking for in your lap?
Oh, gun.
I said golden AK. I don't know what the fuck. Oh, you guys, at the compound?
I don't know if you knew this, but it's nice being rich. You know?
Jimmy, your friend, I'll tell you, you're one of those comedians. That Netflix special must have really took off.
Yeah, it's going to change things. I just decided to get things in gold. You know, before I wouldn't get them in gold, but then when you're rich, you just get things in gold, guys. It's great.
You know, it's funny, man. I performed in Iraq with Colin Quinn and Lori Kilmartin back at the end of 2003, going into 2004. And these Green Berets took us into one of Saddam Hussein's, like they took us to a place where they had all of his weapons stored.
Okay. And
one of the things they showed us was a gold gun that he had weird gold shit. I have a picture of a gold gun, I think, pointed in my mouth. Lori Kilmartin is holding one of Saddam Hussein's real gold guns pointed in my mouth. It was a lovely trip.
I love it. Of course.
It was a lovely trip.
Did they find any weapons of mass destruction in there?
We did not. No.
Oh, damn it.
We did not. The worst part of being in Iraq was trying to shit, because your knees are poking through. The military, shitting in a military installation is horrible because there's these leather things that hang in front of you and your knees poke through them. Like, they don't want you to be too comfortable on the toilet. They want you in and out.
That does make sense because that is our little private time. I could see them doing that on purpose.
Yeah. So you can't whack off or you can't spend too much time reading. Like, they just want you to get in and get the fuck back on the field. What made you go to Florida? Like, was it weather or was it just cheaper down there? Like, for studio space?
No, I mean, because I still got my studio back up in Brooklyn. So I'm like basically just paying double right now, but I couldn't do any stand up in New York.
Oh, right. You know?
So like, I want to get back out and I want to start doing stand up and, yeah, we can't live. It's really hard to live life back in New York. I mean, there was, you know, you can't eat outside because it's too cold. And, you know, they said you can't eat inside because they're fucking idiots.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Yep. And so you just you basically quarantined us again. We're right back to quarantine. And we're very fortunate. Obviously, I'm busting balls about being rich or whatever like that. But like, we're very fortunate where like we had, you did the Netflix special. We had a couple bucks and we could afford to move. And not everybody can. But we said, let's go down here for a few months. And all of our wives or girlfriends were doing work on Zoom. So they were able to move. It was just this like, I've my guys with me, right? And Mark, Alex, and Akash, and we do the podcast and everything. So it was a bunch of us that moved down here. It was 8 of us that had to move. So it was a big undertaking. Wow. But we said, fuck it. We'll do it for 3 months. And if we like it, we enjoy it, we'll make it happen. But
and I mean, you were here in New York? That's where you were situated?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Manhattan.
Oh, shit, man.
Yeah, yeah. So I lived in New York my whole life, and I would have never imagined leaving New York. But the second you shut everything down is you stop us, you know, from being able to make a living. You know, like, we're comics at the end of the day.
This COVID thing, this fucked I mean, listen, even the martial arts community, I mean, it took my team took a hit. I mean, who's moving to Weidman's in South Carolina? Aljo's got a thing in Vegas. It just, this thing hit everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, look at you. You're over there in Miami. Rogan went to Texas.
Yeah.
Everybody's scattered.
People are going to leave, man. People are going to leave. That's what's going to happen. It's. I already see it happen. I see people going to Texas following Rogan. People are following us down here to Miami. Like, it's just what's going to happen. These fucking idiots in New York really just don't get it. I'm telling you, they don't get it.
Let me ask you, only because I love meeting comedians, and I'm really, because I'm fascinated. I love comedy, you know, good comedy, you know. What made you, when you were like a funny kid in high school, and then you just said, all right, I'm going to try an open mic one night, or how did that work out?
I would have never tried it. I think I had too much respect for it to like say, I'm going to go up there and be funny. Like, okay. I don't know. I felt like that'd be like a douchey thing to do. But I was managing a restaurant while I was going to school in California and UC Santa Barbara. And I was managing this restaurant and they just happened to have a comedy night. And I always loved stand up. I mean, like, I got duped into buying the Def Comedy Jam cassettes. Do you remember those?
Remember the Def Comedy Jam.
Yeah, I remember the show.
They used to sell you these VHS cassettes and they'd give you one every month. Right. So somehow I tricked my parents into like ordering them. So we just get a new one every month. And it was a hamburger. It was just every single one.
Yeah. Hamburger. Hamburger.
Right. Which gets funnier and funnier the longer it goes. So it was just like I was obsessed, man. And I was managing this restaurant. They had a comedy night and the guys saw that I was really interested. They're like, do you want to try it? And I was like, I don't know, man. I got a lot of respect for what you guys do. And they're like, why don't you just try it? And I went up there and tried. Little did I know that they were basically kind of like using me as like a bringer. I'm very grateful. Don't get me wrong. But they're basically like, oh, this kid, he might have some friends who go to school. Maybe we'll get some people out to these shows, et cetera. And they let me go up on stage. And, you know, obviously I fucking stunk. You know what? It was interesting. I didn't have any jokes, but I did like well my like second time. Like I kind of understood like the crowd. I don't know, for whatever reason, it was just I had a cool control of it early, even though the jokes sucked. I was still able to kind of like get through it, and I was like, wow, I really enjoy this. This is a lot of fun, and I think that it will take a long time to get good at, and that's something that I like. It will like keep my interest. You know what I mean?
Did you have any bits when you first went up? Did you have you written something there, right? Or did you just wing it? I mean, you had to have something.
No. I had jokes. I mean, they stunk. But
I remember one of your earliest jokes, one of your first jokes.
I remember the first joke I ever did that did well consistently.
Okay.
What was it?
Hit us.
Okay. This was the joke. And I'm sure other comics have done jokes that are similar to this, but this is me fucking 2 weeks into comedy. I love it when a girl talks dirty. I just hate it when she says the same thing over and over again. Like, no.
That's funny. Misdirection. You think you're going one way and then that's it. And people are like, oh. Oh
my God. I'll tell you right now, that'll do really well at like colleges now. You should do that when you tour. Yeah, right. It'll do fucking terrible.
Oh, that'd be out front with pitchforks. But yeah, some basic misdirection jokes are just mean and horrible because they think you're going one way and then the direction you go is just like a sledgehammer.
It doesn't
exactly. And it was like, it's just learning like the fundamentals of jokes. You know, it's not something so weird comedy. Like, unless you're like a big comedy fan in terms of structure, you know, like I didn't grow up, this is actually, I didn't grow up watching a lot of like traditional like white comedy. Right. So a lot of the comedy I grew up was like Def Comedy Jam and then like the Kings of Comedy. And they all seemed like they were riffing. Right.
Yeah. Right.
If I was watching like Seinfeld, I never watched Seinfeld. Like I didn't, honestly, I've seen Seinfeld maybe recently, a few episodes, but like I didn't get the idea of like a ba-dum-psh type of joke until like much later on. So for me, I just thought they were kind of riffing and I was like, okay, you got to have some stories and obviously some, you know, misdirection or something. But I it wasn't until later on that I really like understood the craft of like joke writing and seeing guys obviously like Attell, like the real kind of like a misdirecty,
yep,
like joke slingers, that I really started to be like, oh, that's a skill I need to learn and try to incorporate into whatever style I do. You know what I'm saying?
Can I ask you guys both a question, guys? This is for two comedians. And you got to be honest. Don't think about, all the old comedians are going to out me if I don't like this guy. God forbid. Andy Kaufman. If I go to see Andy Kaufman and the guy's singing songs and handing out cookies, I'm fucking turning over tables. What the fuck? Oh, he's an artist. What is he talking about? Oh, it's today. And the cow goes moo. Go fuck yourself. I mean, only because he's dead early, people are like, oh my goodness.
It's not the most, I understand why people would be very disappointed if they went and saw it, but he did do some really funny shit. He was just more like, I mean, much, much more performance art than it was traditional stand-up. Sure. And a lot of it does make me laugh because it took you off guard completely. Like him and Bob Zemuda. I remember watching those specials when I was a kid and he'd be arguing with a heckler and you had no idea that he was actually friends with the heckler and it was a part of it. So you're watching this comedian fight with a heckler.
Oh, see, that's funny.
Yeah, he was like a weird, but he was genuine. Like it wasn't fake. Like he didn't do it just to make people like that was what he thought was funny. So at least he was like, there was a story one time, like he went on stage in New York and he just fucking took a sleeping bag on stage and went to sleep. And it's like such an asshole thing to do, but he thought that was really funny to do on stage. And I can respect it because for him, it was genuine. It wasn't bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know a lot about him, to be honest with you. Obviously I've seen like the movie and stuff. But my assumption is that like, usually as comics, we like make fun of institutions, right? And then sometimes comedy becomes an institution. So then there are comics that make fun of the institution that is comedy.
Yeah.
So if everybody's trying to be funny and then he tries to not be funny, oftentimes that's funny. So he's really a reflection of like how popular comedy became, right? If comedy wasn't popular, you can't have a Kaufman. Right. But I guess comedy at that time was just so fucking popular that it was funny to make fun of comedy, or it's funny to not be funny. It's not my cup of tea. I agree with you. I don't know if I'd toss tables. You and I have different skill sets when it comes to fighting, but I can see what he's going for. I'm like, whatever with the alt stuff, to be honest with you, because in my opinion, you got to prove that you can actually do it before you make fun of it. I think there's a lot of these people who are like, I'm just going to make fun of comedy. I'm like, well, I need to see you kill for 5 minutes before you're going to make fun of people who can kill for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a very, and then he committed to it. Like there was Tony Clifton, that fucking awful fat character that he did, who was like a, I mean, but he really committed to it. Volare! And he would just get people infuriated. But when you watch it, it's like, that's a funny dude, man. So he was funny.
I mean, ultimate commitment. He got cancer.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Right?
He died of cancer.
Lung cancer.
What's that?
Lung cancer. And he didn't smoke outside of being the character Tony Clifton.
Yeah, I didn't. Oh, maybe it was lung cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, maybe that was actually part of the bit. He's like, well, I got to do this and die. It's a part of it. It's got to happen.
My good, that is actually, I never thought of it like that.
And you, dude, you're I love that Israel Adesanya loves you. I can tell how much Israel Adesanya loves you. And that, because I love him too. And that really makes me happy.
Dude, he's the best, man. He's been like the coolest dude even before, right? He was just a big fan and supporter of the podcast that we were doing, Brilliant Idiot with Charlemagne. He listened to Flagrant too as well. And like, I don't know, we would just get to talking and he was telling me what he was going to do in MMA. And this is before he decided to like go out there and fucking do it. And it's just been amazing to watch him become the force that he is. Like, it's just so, you know, what's the coolest part about it? And I'm curious your guys' perspective. You guys know the sport way better than I do, but obviously this guy transitions from, you know, kickboxing, right? And I feel like when you make that transition to MMA, there's going to be insecurity, right? You're going against like elite level wrestlers and grapplers that you never went up against when you're just doing traditional kickboxing. But lately, it almost feels like he's got this new level of confidence. He's like, no, I can defend myself against them. The earlier fights, it seemed like it was on his mind a little bit. He was like, but what if I get taken down? Or what if they get my back? Or what if? And now he's like, I know how, I'm good here. I got this. Because what he's been doing lately has been unbelievable.
Well, you've seen him training with Andre Galval.
In San Diego? Is that the guy he was?
Where is he? Somewhere where it's sunny. Those Brazilians hate the cold. Anyway, but I remember I seen him at Atos and Academy, and I think he just got his purple belt, I'm pretty sure. But I seen him rolling around with Galval, who's one of the best grapplers on the planet. So he's, you know, he's definitely, I seen him in his fights too, like go for Inamari rolls type of thing. I never looked at him as a guy. I was surprised when I heard he was a pure kickboxer, like before this. Like, but let me ask you something. How did you get involved before he got in the UFC? How'd you even get hooked up?
He was just listening to the podcast, you know, and he was just, you know, I guess he was a fan of Charlemagne and the Breakfast Club. And then he listened to Brilliant Idiots and he started listening to Flagrant 2. And then, I don't know, we just kind of like linked, maybe it was social media probably. And I just saw some guy who I really thought got it. Like some of the new age athletes, they understand the value of social media. You know, and like how it can really help promote them and really change their lives, you know, and I felt like he really got it. And we were both kind of coming up at the same time in a way. You know, I was getting some success in comedy as he was getting some success in MMA. And I don't know, I guess our paths were kind of aligned in that way. So it was cool. But he's just the realest dude, man. Like, he's just the coolest motherfucker.
Man, his confidence, he has a reason to have it too, man, because he's so like, he has way more power. I always say this, but he has a lot more power than people give him credit for. When he dropped Brunson, who is not easy to knock out, or Whitaker, Costa, like he's really done damage to these guys who no one expects to go down. So I think people kind of sleep on how much power he actually has besides speed, and he's great with distance. He's also has a lot more power than he gets credit for.
Yeah, it was weird because like that Gastelum fight, right?
Yep.
Such a war. And in a way, it was great because it was one of the most entertaining fights in history, right? And it's great to see somebody in a war so you know that he has that gear. But I think most people would probably agree that the guys that he's fought after Gastelum are better fighters and he's just demolished them. So why do you guys think that Gastelum fight was so tricky?
Well, look at how many times Gastelum got finished besides Wyvern submitting him. I mean, guys, people bring a different skill set. Even if they're a better fighter, they bring a different skill set to the table. And one of his strongest skills, you could say, is his durability. He's a durable guy, Gastelum. I know Jack Hermanson caught him in a heel hook, but how often do you see Kevin Gastelum getting KO'd? I'm, you look on the record, I don't think he ever did get KO'd. Maybe I'm a tech. I don't. He's a durable, durable guy. Weidman's a bigger dude, and Weidman literally had to strangle him down there, and he kept trying to get up, and he almost put Weidman down with a left hand. So
right. Yes.
So I mean, he's a durable, durable guy. So, and he's a little stocky guy. I know what it's like to be the shorter guy in there.
Yeah,
that puts
you
down at you, where he's not going to have that with Jan Blachowicz. Yeah. So I actually have him picked to win versus Jan, and I like now, Jan. He's a powerful Polish man, but
yeah.
Precision.
But yeah, it seems like it could be an easy fight for Izzy, right?
Yeah.
Because Jan's going to stand in front of him.
Yeah. Big target, man. Big target, accurate striker who's been in there with world-class strikers.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, I mean, but it is, you know, what's really makes it exciting is that, you know, Izzy could land a few and he could be outstriking him, but it's almost like Derek Lewis versus Volkov where, you know, one shot could make a huge difference. You know what I mean? So it's going to be one of those edge of the seat ones. You know what I mean?
I think he could have, I don't think Jan Blachowicz is an easy fight at all. You know, when you look at what he did to Dominic Reyes, his name doesn't ring out the way like John Jones or other guys do in that division. But I think he's a lot more dangerous than people think. He's tremendous on the ground, very strong. The last thing you want to do is get pressed up against the cage by that guy. He's a vicious uppercut. I mean, obviously Adesanya's smart. Like he knows how to avoid that shit and, you know, and couldn't get to him. So
fast, smart footwork.
Yeah.
I think it's going to bring the best. You're going to see some Matrix shit out of Adesanya.
Yeah, I agree, man.
That's what I think.
I agree, man. I think that was the thing about Gastelum that was so impressive is his ability to close distance against a guy like Izzy.
Yeah.
Like Gastelum had this weird thing. I was talking to Izzy like literally right afterward. And I was like, dude, he does this little hop in when he throws. He does this weird like little hop when he's throwing. I think what is Gastelum's conventional or is he southpaw? He's orthodox.
I'm feeling southpaw. But
yeah, I think he's lefty.
Southpaw. And I was like, he does a little kind of hop to close the distance. And I literally in midway through the sentence, he's like, it's the hop, right? Yeah, we didn't see the hop coming. We didn't understand where it was. And it does let him get in there. And he's sneaky with the fucking head movement. But yeah, I don't know, man. I think that obviously Jan has that lights out, give you a nap power. I just don't see him touching Izzy. I just see Izzy creating that distance, especially with the leg kicks and, I don't know, man. It's hard to bet against him now, man.
Yeah, it's very hard. See, these are the fights, though, like whenever it's a guy like a Blachowicz that everybody kind of looks past because he doesn't have the name of a John Jones. Like a lot of people look past him against Dominic Reyes. And again, Adesanya could beat him. And I don't think Adesanya is foolish enough to look past him because he's going up in weight.
I think the reason why people maybe look past with Dominic Reyes is nobody ever seen Reyes lose. They only saw him lose with John Jones. Everybody thought he won that match.
That's true. So I think he won that fight too.
You've never seen a guy take a beating or even like lose a fight.
Right.
I mean, technically he did with Jones, but a lot of people thought he won. Yeah. Meanwhile, you saw Jan get stopped before.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that's in your head where you've never seen this guy get hurt. You've seen this guy get hurt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that might be in the back of your head.
Yeah.
You know.
I got a question for you guys. Why do you think, and is it credit to Dana? I don't know who we give credit to, but why do you think that the UFC has done such an unbelievable job of marketing and boxing has done absolutely nothing now that Mayweather has left the sport? Maybe Tyson Fury's been able to like create a little bit of interest, Deontay Wilder, but like, why has the UFC been able to get casual fans interested in fighters who have 8-10 losses? It's almost like the record doesn't matter. It's almost like a personality war or something like that.
Well, that's true. If you look, how long have you been watching for, Andrew?
I'm like a newer fan. I think I was like the most casual years back. Obviously, when, you know, Chuck Liddell was fighting, you know, there was definitely some interest there, but I didn't really know anything about the grappling side or jiu-jitsu side. I'm like a huge boxing fan. Like I grew up as like a big boxing fan. I used to box a little bit. Like my dad used to cover the sport. He'd go to Ali's camp all the time and shit like that. So I came in as like a striking fan, and as MMA seemed to shift into like more of a striking sport that it kind of is now, it almost seems like the there's a lot more on the feet action than like maybe the earlier stages. I think that I was kind of really attracted to it. And then once I saw the personalities and how they really used to the personalities to draw people in. I was like, all right, they got it. They figured this thing out.
Yeah. I think it's several reasons. One, the sport itself is just, it's so exciting. Where if you look at boxing, you look at a main event, you know, guys could be in the, you know, out gambling, whatever it is, at least the way it used to be. Now everything's weird. And then they'd come in for the main event, no matter who it is. The prelims were the prelims, but who really gave a shit? Unless you're a purist. This is sometimes. I mean, no, this is what I see. You know?
I'm what you're about to say, I think, is something that I feel. But go on.
But the UFC, if I watch a UFC, like, look, there's a UFC on Saturday. That's a card that I was just looking at, which we're going to talk later, or even when you're on, right. And I'm just looking at that card. Yeah. And dude, I want to watch the early prelims. I want to watch every fucking fight on there.
Yeah.
I'm looking on this goddamn thing. And I swear to God, I'm looking on the prelims. I see Jim Miller versus Bobby Green at fucking five. I'm watching that.
Yeah.
Like, did you want to watch every fight? So it's like, you know, and then there's the main event and it's like, oh, I got this one versus this one still. I don't know. And the UFC, the way the production, they do it very well. They get you amped up. And another thing that gets you drawn in, and again, I started in 2001 when Zuffa had just one show prior. They took over for the old bosses. And what really changed, and because I fought before The Ultimate Fighter, and then I was on The Ultimate Fighter, and I fought after that, is shows like The Ultimate Fighter, shows now like The Contender, where you actually get to know our personalities. Like nobody,
yes.
And I was 7-7 going into that house. I know Jimmy, like you said, the BJ Penn, the Dean Thomas, close calls.
I know, Frank Trigg, I mean, and then shocked the world. I do like to mention that.
Oh, no, he went yes. The other ones could have went either way. You say that all the time.
Of course I do.
You embarrass me. But the thing is this. The thing is, they get to know your personalities. And, hey, man, this guy's an exciting fighter. I don't. Sometimes he wins, sometimes he loses. But, shit, I got to watch when this guy fights. He goes for more platas. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying. So I think part of it's those shows that get you involved with it.
100%.
And the sport is amazing, you know.
And don't forget, the one thing I love about it is they give you the fights you want.
Mm.
Like, because there's not five promotions fighting. Like, when you looked at, like, Tyson, Evander Holyfield, it took 6 years. I know Tyson went to jail, but even before that, it was this one, a nonsense. Fucking Gilbert Burns, Kamaru Usman. Okay, let's make it happen. Colby Covington against us. Let's make it happen. They make fucking fights happen, and the fighters are good to fans, and that makes the fans invested in them. I've never seen a fighter be a dick to the fans, a UFC fighter.
Yeah, I wonder if this is the benefit of having one sanctioning body have total control of the most elite ring of the sport. Like, obviously, there are the other things, right? You have, you know, Bellator and what the other ones. I don't even know if they're still doing, what was it called? K1 or something like that in Europe?
Japan? But there's, you know, other organizations overseas or whatever.
There's tons of organizations, but like, obviously, you know, with boxing, there's like 10 different fucking divisions and this belt and that belt and everything's meaningless at the same time. There's not a lot of control, but the fact that the UFC has control of all these fighters, they can keep giving them fights. They can choose whenever they give them the fights. And I understand that the fighters might complain about pay and they're not making as much as the boxers. But at the same time, if you're a boxer with a 16-10 record, you're not making that much either.
Right.
So the reality is you could make the argument that it is more profitable because a loss isn't counted against you in the same way in MMA as it is in boxing or some other fight sports.
It's true. No, it's true.
I also think boxing too, the decisions, like the last fight I watched Gennady Golovkin against Alvarez, the first fight.
Yeah.
I thought Golovkin clearly won that. And the judging, and I know the judges can be the same, is so disgusting in boxing. And boxing, fair or not, has a reputation of much dirt and corruption in the sport, whether that's earned or whether that's exaggerated. Whereas the UFC, there's people who don't like Dana, but people, the UFC does not have that shit reputation that boxing has.
Well, here's the thing. That's a function of the cost of a loss. Right. If you have $5 million invested in a boxer, right, and then they lose,
all right,
all of a sudden you can't return that money that you put into this boxer in the same way. But in the UFC, if you lose, we're going to see you fight 3 months later, regardless.
Yep.
Like, there are guys who probably are fighting. I mean, like, when was the last time Cerrone won?
It's been a while since I can actually tell you.
And but we still like the guy. We still want to see him fight. He's going to fight, I think, with Diego Sanchez or something like that coming up soon. And we still like it. We still excited. He's on the roster. It's almost like all these fighters become characters in this like sitcom, right? And we're like, yeah, we still want to see you pop in and out every once in a while. You're entertaining. And the more entertaining you make yourself outside the ring, like you were saying, with those shows – with 24/7 happening in Boxer, the more we are invested, like that guy, Platinum Mike Perry, I'm obsessed with this fucking guy. I don't know why. I just watch him walk around South Beach on Instagram. I'm obsessed with his relationship with his wife and his new kid.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I love watching him. Bro, he's hilarious. He shows up, when he showed up to the weigh-in and he steps on the scale and the guy's looking as if he's going to like get it to the exact pound that he was at. He just looks at him. He goes, it's not even close, buddy. Like, when he showed up 5 minutes. So, it's like, we should be angry at this, right? We should be furious about this, but the guy's hysterical. And because of that, we keep wanting to see him.
Well, he's another genuine guy. He's a very, we've interviewed him a few times and he's a very, there's no bullshit in this guy. Like you never wonder how he feels. Like, you know exactly how he feels.
I will call him out on one piece of bullshit.
What's that?
I think he's way smarter than he lets on.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I think he's way smarter. And I think his approach, I don't know, stylistically, I don't know. Again, I don't know everything about ground and pound and all these things. I know just striking, boxing, not even the feet. But his decision-making in like certain fights, obviously you fight certain guys that are going to outclass you regardless. But his decision-making and his discipline that I've seen in certain fights lead me to believe that he takes this shit seriously. He's not out there. Okay. Like, I'm just, you know, remember Ricardo Mayorga? Remember that fighter back in the day was a boxer and he would like smoke the cigarettes in the ring afterwards.
Cigarettes at the press conference.
Yeah. Like, you know, I don't think that Platinum Mike Perry is like, I'm just going to go in there, brawl. I don't give a fuck about technique or any of this other shit. I have a feeling that he takes that shit seriously. When he's training, he takes it seriously because it does show in the ring. And he maybe presents this like, I don't give a fuck attitude. But I think there's part of him that does give.
Oh, yeah.
Give a fuck about the craft.
Well, he can fight.
Yeah.
And he puts the work in and you've seen improvements.
Yeah. He's gotten more patient. He's more patient in the cage than he was. Yeah, you're right. He's changed a lot.
And you can tell he's not stupid when you hear him on the mic. He's very natural on the mic.
Yeah.
He comes across with some great stuff and it's never cringy. It's always like makes you laugh. It's almost like in the Derek Lewis type of
When he was talking about the taxes, he was like, actually, it's good they took some money away because it's going to drop me in the tax bracket or something. I was like, bro, this guy's hilarious. this guy is absolutely hilarious. I love this guy.
Yeah.
Now, as a comedian, and you go to a Starbucks and you're wearing those Keds and you got the scarf, are you prepared to use your boxing or your comedy skills to get out of trouble if somebody fucks with you? I'm asking as a just, I want to know.
Because maybe
I'll be prepared to do
it. It depends the size. It depends how big the guy is that's talking shit. But my fighting days are over, man. I can't be fighting anybody anymore. You know what I mean?
But you could be instigating some shit dressing like that.
That is true. I am opening myself up for criticism.
Yeah.
And I will take that. That is okay. That is fine. But yeah, man, I don't know. Fighting,
you
don't
give a shit. I like it.
For me, if I'm going to fight someone, there's a very definite, if they're under the age of 9 or over the age of 85, I get physical. But anything in between, I try to joke or talk my way out of it.
Honestly, at this point in my life, I don't think there's anything that you could say to me where it's just me and you, where I'd have to fight somebody.
Right.
If you're saying it in front of my girl, I might have to fight you, but I'm almost like, why would you make me do this? If she wasn't here, you could say all that shit. But she's here, and I got to make her think I can protect her, so now I got to fucking fight you. Yeah, no, but if you just said this, say again?
No one wants to fight. No, the thing is, there's times, this is what I love about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and you should try it. I can tell you're almost anti-arm locks. You're like, I like the box.
What I love about Jiu-Jitsu is that, unlike boxing, you can't really train at 100% because you could really get hurt and someone else get hurt. But when I see the jiu-jitsu guys, because of the tap out, you can train at 100, right?
Listen, like the perfect, I rolled yesterday, my buddy Tess. There's tap outs. So if it was us dropped into a warehouse, I know this guy's walking out with a broken shoulder. He's got a broken shoulder. I could have put him to sleep. because they're, you know what I mean? So you right. get right to that point where if he doesn't do this, the shoulders, I mean, you're not going to do it to a friend. You're going to say, hey, man, are you sure? You know what I mean? point, like, you know, you're like, you're not feeling this. Your hand's about to fucking scratch the back of your head. But there's times like, I'll tell you right now, but it's kind of, it is safe in a sense where there's like, I had a something called a bread cutter choke where I had the gi on where I was strangling him. And all of a sudden you hear, like he starts like breathing out of his nose. And I'm like, dude, what the? And then he ended up getting out. But I go, dude, he goes, no, I got a little air in. But we're not. So it's a game of almost playing, trying to kill each other. But nobody's getting hurt. Nobody got hurt. We walked out of there fine. But it's such I know it sounds sick, but it's such a beautiful thing. Jimmy's going to mess around with it. His sensei.
Yeah. Andrew knows him very well.
That was my sensei.
Yes, the same guy.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
I
Jimmy.
We live, when I was in New York, we lived a block away from each other. We were like on the same block.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so we would go over to Tiger Schulman's. I mean, shout out to Jimmy. Jimmy's a great fucking guy, man.
Yeah, isn't he awesome?
He's a sweetheart guy. And he's one of the guys I always tell him. I was like, Jimmy, like, I know that this is not authentic for you, but we got to create a character around you so that you can just make tons of money and then retire. Like, because you're a great fighter, but if we just spruce up what's around it, then you have all the leverage in the world to ask for, I don't know how much these guys make, $500,000 a fight or whatever the fuck it is, right? Right now, he's actually going about it the hardest way. He's like, I'm going to beat everybody up, but I'm not going to give them this bigger than life personality, you know? And I want that guy to retire, take care of his fucking giant dogs, do whatever he wants.
Well, listen, he's a sweet, I'm sorry, Jimmy, just same subject with Jimmy, leading, because he had to fight Aljo, and we had Jimmy on the show a bunch, so I like Jimmy. So I'd see him all week long, and all week long, he's smiling, hey, Matt, you know, he's just a nice guy. And I'd be with Aljo, but he's always smiling. Like we're giving each other bro hugs. And I go, Aljo, and Aljo's like, man, he's like really nice, man. And I almost don't even want to talk to him. Cause he's too, I go, Aljo, that's not the face you're going to see. That smiling face. That's not the face you're going to see in the cage. I'm telling you right now. Yeah. I remember being in the cage with Aljo. Like I'm on the thing. I'm on the apron there. And then Jimmy comes after. And dude, I remember when he got in, first time I see him all week long. I didn't see this guy all week long because he came in. He's jogging around the fucking guy. I go, look, I go, see what the fuck I'm talking about? Be a matador. Get the fuck out, dude. Because that guy is scary. Little pit bull. I like Jimmy Rivera.
Oh, he's a bad motherfucker, dude. I mean, I remember watching Jimmy fight Jan, and Jimmy would outstrike Jan for 4 minutes and 30 seconds of a round, and then Jan would land a fucking bomb in the last 30 seconds. And I mean, he almost put Jimmy out, but you know, Jimmy's a tough kid, but I literally remember talking to him. I was like, dude, if the rounds were 4 minutes long, you win that fight easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he said, if his fucking aunt had balls, it'd be his uncle. And I'm not. Yeah. I'm fucking true. Around.
No, if his aunt had balls, I'd date her.
Man, he did great in that fight, but the judges, you know, it's the famous saying, they got short memories, man. How shit ended, you know.
I think that he agrees that Jan got the fight. I mean, you know, he got dropped and everything like that, but I'm just saying that he can compete at that level. But that's a good question. So it's like, when you're coaching guys, Matt, like, how much are you balancing their self-esteem? Like, your fighters, they're fighting professionally, are you concerned about their self-esteem going into a fight? Will you take it easy on them if you feel like they're feeling a little bit low? Will you try to build them up a little bit? Obviously, you want them going in confident.
Well, there's times like this. For instance, I'll answer that. There's times with Longo when I've had, we do this with our guys too, but leading up to a fight, if I was supposed to get like a couple more sparring sessions in, and let's say I had two more planned before I leave to Vegas, whatever it is, and then the one before the last one, I was on the money. Longo goes, that's the last day. That's it. We're ending it on today. We're not doing it. Yeah. That's it. And then for a couple of reasons. One, it'll make me want to get to sparring again. Maybe sometimes I'll be like, but I'm used to sparring like every week. How many times? So when it comes to fight time, fight night, I'm like, all right, I'm itching to get my hands on somebody again. And two, my confidence is high because I had a great day of sparring. So it's one of those things. Like, you want a guy leaving, but you don't want guys sitting there just being punching bags for you. It has to be a legit thing.
Yeah.
So Jimmy,
it's a balancing act a little.
Jimmy, before you tape a special or before you tape like a late night or something like that, the set before you tape, do you want it to be good or bad? Because I've heard wisdom for both.
You know, it's funny. Whenever I would do for special, because there's so much more going into it, I'll kind of, it's hard to say because I got two shots at it. Typically, the early show is not as good as the late show.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
I go back and I watch it. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to use the early show as the base. Yeah, it was way better than I thought. I was more, whenever I would do the Tonight Show, because you only get one shot at that, and a special is a bigger deal. But I would go out to L.A. and I would always go on at the improv. And every time I would fucking tank.
Eat it.
I would always go to the comic strip before I went to L.A. because I literally, in I guess the since in 15 years since I've been passed at the comic strip, I've probably had one good set and the rest were bombs. I fucking eat my balls in that room. So I would always go to the strip and try to work it out because it's not that I want a bomb, but it's going to happen. So let's get it out of the way.
You know, it's like I always think about that. Obviously, you want to be confident going into the set, right? But sometimes when you're on a kill streak, you forget, at least for me, I forget how to tell the jokes while I'm bombing. Like, you know how like when you're doing shitty, all of a sudden you forget tags, you forget where this joke goes, your rhythm is all off because there's no like laughter that's part of that little cadence that you built up.
Yeah.
Right. So in a way, it's almost good to have like a bomb in that week.
Yeah.
Like I like to have a kill right before I film anything, but in that week, I like to have a bomb so I feel what it's like in case shit doesn't go well. And I'm like, oh no, I remember this. I've been here before. We can get ourselves out of this. You know what I'm talking about?
If a joke doesn't work, not to panic. If a joke or two doesn't work, just kind of make it look like this is exactly how it's supposed to go. Mm-hmm. And we've all had a few jokes miss in a stand-up set on TV, but the crowd's kind of rooting for you, so you can't implode. Like, I can't behave the way I would in the fucking Dallas Improv if I'm bombing, you know, and just tell the crowd to fucking burn themselves on the way out the door. You have to salvage it.
Let me ask you guys, do you have any stuff in the chamber in case there's hecklers? Do you have it already lined up, or is it more of, this person's messing with me, let me see where I go with this and see what they're wearing? Or do you have something already ready to change, fire off if there's an idiot yelling something, like, or no?
Not really. I mean, like, I know there's guys that have kind of like stock lines for that, but which I don't blame them for at all, because it's like, let's get back to the show. Like, these guys are assholes, you know, who are just interrupting the show. I don't really have anything. Sometimes I can be like really cruel. Like, it's not even funny. It just makes everybody sad. You know, like, I mean, there are moments that like we have on film, cause we just like film everything, that like my guys want me to release, but I'm like, this is the most unlikable thing that we've ever, like, I mean, it's just like really cruel. Like, I'll just be like, I'll just stop the show and just be really cruel, cause I'm so angry that they would interrupt the show.
It's rude. You know what I mean? Like, it's rude.
Yeah, but it's selfish. You know, it's just like, I don't even want it to be fun anymore. I just want you to know the cost of interrupting, and then we can get back to the fun. Like, I love talking to the crowd. I love talking to people in the audience. I don't consider them hecklers at all. Yeah. Like, if anything, they're like, they're scared, and I kind of want them to look cool sometimes. I want them to look fun. I want them to be interesting. If there's a guy on a date with a girl, I want him to look cool to her. I don't know. We can have fun here without just humiliating, but anybody who interrupts the fucking show,
rude,
right? Rude. Especially if you're doing well. If I'm bombing and you want to say some shit, all right, that's on me. I'm bombing. But if the show's going well and you interrupt, I don't even think I can be funny in that moment. I just want to tear their fucking head off.
Yeah, because it depends on their face too. Like, when somebody interrupts you, it's a weird sense you get. Like, are they really just trying to have fun with you and they're dumb?
Or
are they just drunk? Or are they doing that thing where they're trying to fucking sabotage? And when you have to get that quick sense, and when they're trying to sabotage, I've ruined sets because the crowd doesn't know what they're doing, but I know what they're doing. And it's like, you know what? It's worth going down in flames for.
Yes, it is.
Our buddy Adam Hunter, you know Adam?
I know Adam,
He was one I saw on Instagram. He was saying, said some joke, and a girl goes, that was a dad joke. He goes, well, I'm a dad. It's like, if you were up here doing horror jokes. That was fucking great.
Life can be a battle. Whoever you are, we're all fighting for something. O2 Industries is here to protect fighters like you. That's why they created TR2, the ultimate military-grade respirator. It battles airborne particles so you can fight for honor, not for air. Developed with Tier 1 operators, this respirator is eyewear compatible and fits a wide range of facial profiles. It's even approved by elite fighters like George St. Pierre. TR2 launches on October 20th, available for fighters like you. Check out its bold design and pre-order yours at protectthefighter.com. O2 Industries, proud to fight alongside the UFC.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is also, are you familiar with Kamaru Usman, the champion, fighting Gilbert Burns? Are you familiar?
Yeah. You know what? DC said something interesting about that. And he goes, those guys know who's better. Those guys have trained with each other.
That's right.
Those guys know who's better. And he used an example of, I guess when he and like Cain Velasquez, I guess they were training with each other. And I don't know if they ever ended up
for years. Fighting. Never.
No, they never would fight.
They actually said they would never fight each other. Yeah.
But he, which I thought was really cool because he was vulnerable about it. And he was like, Mark, you can come through this way. He said, he goes, I couldn't beat Cain. I knew I couldn't beat Cain. Cain knew that I couldn't beat him as well. So it's like, that's Mark, guys.
Mark, nice to meet you.
And so I just thought that I was super vulnerable of him to get that. And I guess those guys know because those guys have been training. So what do you think it is? You think that do you think Gilbert feels like he can do it? Or he just wants the shot?
Yeah, I think that his confidence is see, that's funny that you said that because it's like he cannot wait. You look at his Instagram.
He's excited.
Like, how many more sleeps and this and that? We're right there. And
yep.
But, you know, but Kamaru, he doesn't seem like he's got, you know, he seems focused. Now he's working with Trevor Whitman. That's an interesting combo. Get some work in with Justin Gaethje. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So, I mean, listen, it's got the making of a great fight because it's not like because Gilbert has the jiu-jitsu to really offset the balance of Kamaru down there on the floor. Because chances are Kamaru will get that takedown. So it's exciting.
Oh, so you're saying if it does go to the floor,
yes,
then Kamaru puts himself in a vulnerable situation potentially because of how good Gilbert is on the ground.
Possibly, or his wrestling might be able to nullify it.
Yeah.
But could it? I don't know. I mean, you're looking at a guy that, you know, put the Damian Maia to sleep after Damian Maia had him in a position that he strangled half of the fucking division. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
He gets on somebody's back. Right. You can't count how many times. There's guys like Jorge Masvidal that survived it. But, you know, a lot of times guys aren't surviving getting out and then doing damage the way Gilbert did. I mean, Gilbert was in horrible positions. Gilbert has world-class jiu-jitsu. He was a world jiu-jitsu champion. He doesn't have very good jiu-jitsu. He has world-class. He's as good as you can get, man. He's up there. He's up there. If he jumps into any submission grappling tournament, he'll do very well for himself. Like, you know what I mean? The best guys on the planet. So that's what Kamaru's dealing with down there. Upstairs. I mean, this is a pick'em fight to me. This is a rough
one. Yeah.
Hey, look, Colby and Kamaru, everyone thought was going to wind up on the floor, and it didn't go to the floor at all. Because I think sometimes when both guys know how good the other guy is and that on the floor, it nullifies a little bit. And neither guy wants to be in the position where they lose in a place that they know they're so good. So maybe they avoid it for a while. Maybe a lot of the fight is standing up. Who the fuck knows?
I mean, I love that. I love the idea of them standing. But Burns seems like he's got some hands on him, too. Like
he does.
He strikes like a guy who started striking.
Right? I said the same thing. Yeah.
Doesn't he? Like, he seems very natural in his striking. There are certain guys that strike in a way like they learned it after the fact. Like, even Colby, whose striking seems good, like, he still strikes like a guy who looks like he started wrestling. Like, he throws some kind of unorthodox punches. Like, and maybe he does it strategically, but, like, he throws this kind of, like, big looping left, And maybe that's like to fake the, maybe it's to fake the takedown to get you to drop your hands to like sprawl. And then he comes over the top. But in terms of like a boxing punch, I don't know where anybody would learn something like that. And maybe that's something that's developed through MMA, but it just seemed unorthodox. But when Gilbert fights, it's super traditional. Like, I don't know.
Henry Hooft. Henry Hooft.
He's his coach.
Yeah. He's a beast.
I remember him fighting in the, was it K1?
Yes. Oh no. Yeah, man. He's a big, like, he seems like a Dutchman. I want to say he's Dutch.
Yeah. Black dude. Big. He was like, I thought he was a black dude.
No, he's a white guy.
So who am I thinking? That's,
you're thinking of Alistair Overeem. I don't know.
Yeah. No.
Listen, well, are you familiar also with Macy Barber or no?
No, I don't know any of the chick fighters, okay, man. Okay. I haven't gotten into them that much. I remember there was I did see one fight that was really fucking amazing, man. These two girls going at it, but it's been amazing how they've been able to promote female MMA. I mean, like, that never happened in boxing. Nobody ever got into female boxing, even with Leila Ali. No one even cared.
Yeah, it was Ronda. Ronda started that. And then there was, and then when you see someone like Amanda Nunes, who's as fucking solid as anybody in the UFC, or Cyborg had this big mystique that she came in. She had won 20 straight fights. Holly Holm coming in and beating Ronda with a head kick. Like, there was some really exciting women that came in, and people watched her and go, no, it's like watching anybody else fight. I mean, there's just two fucking animals and they're slugging each other. So that, I think that's what kind of made
it. Not only that, Jimmy, but jujitsu wise.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Best technique, because
jiu-jitsu, very flexible. Yeah.
Well, they're flexible, but it's leverage, it's timing. It's not so much power and strength. So women, just like kids, they pick up jujitsu quicker than men would. You know what I mean? Because they don't have anything to compensate with. Like, in other words, you don't walk into a jiu-jitsu school and see a bunch of muscle heads. It's not really, you know what I mean? Because they'll do 60% of it, and then they'll 40% try to muscle something. Yeah, you don't get that. You know what I mean? So
I was shooting. Me and my girl were on vacation. We went to like this, I don't know, kind of like a shooting range, if you will. And the guy said, women shoot way better than men in the beginning, like way better. It's not even close. I go, why? And he goes, they just listen when you give them advice. Like, every guy has been fake shooting since he's 4 years old. Like, we had the Nerf guns. We got water guns. Every one of us right now probably thinks that we could shoot very accurately. Yeah. Right. Because we've been fake doing it for a while. We're like, women don't. So they're like, oh, you're saying I should watch it pass through the target and then pull the trigger? I'll do it. And they just get it every single time. And I wonder if jujitsu is something like that, since it's not sheer force and strength, and there's not that like ego attached to the technique, that like a guy would just be like, well, I'm just going to flip him over and then choke him out. Maybe they learn it a little bit quicker and have a little bit more of appreciation for the technique instead of trying to overcompensate with straight power.
Yeah. And they don't even have the power to compensate. So if they turn exactly where they should be, you know, and they're not distributing all the weight the right way, they're not getting the move. So they have to do things correctly, where a guy could be like, sure, just bring this over here and kind of, you know, mess with the technique because of his strength.
I got a couple questions. I don't know how much longer you guys have, but I have a couple questions I want to ask you before we got to go. Sure. You guys, you know, kick me out whenever you guys need, I'm curious about, what do you think about Ben Askren's chances against Jake Paul?
Jimmy, you want to take it first?
I told Ben this. I think Ben knocks him out in the second round because I know Jake takes boxing. But Jake has not spent years being hit by guys who strike professionally. Jake has not spent years moving out of the way. I don't care if Ben's a wrestler. He has had to get out of the way. I mean, he withstood with Robbie Lawler. I mean, it was a close one, but Jake has never been hit by guys like that. He's tough, though. Jake Paul's not a pussy, but I think Ben Askren finishes him in the second round.
I feel that, listen, Ben Askren's a durable guy. If he took like three or more knees like he did from Jorge, or stoppages like that, maybe you could start to be like, hey, man, this guy's chin is suspect. He's one of the most durable guys. He never even got wobbled in a fight before that, you know, highlight knockout.
Right.
So to think that he's going to go in and get touched and be put on his ass is ridiculous.
Crazy.
Not to mention, he doesn't have to go in there like a rock'em sock'em robot. I say this guy's not going to go in there like Jack Dempsey or nothing, but I get, why would I say Jack Dempsey out of all the fucking bots?
Why not?
I could say, can I name an older, like Jack Johnson.
Jack Johnson, sure.
J.R. Sullivan. But what I feel is he will be good enough to strike him up, clinch him up. And I'll tell you, yep. I think the young kid, Jake Paul, he'll be a little powerful in the beginning, but then after a little while, that's going to fade a little bit from getting tied up. And then Ben will just, he's a guy that doesn't get tired. He's going to wear on him. Look in the later rounds for Ben just to be more overwhelming him. You can hit pity patter, but if you don't get tired and you're in a guy's face, I've had guys that don't hit hard where I'd fucking hit him in sparring. And also they're not going nowhere. I'm already getting hit in the face. I'm like, you fuck. I wish we had any takedowns. No, but you know what I mean?
So yes. Okay, this is interesting because I haven't heard this. So basically the idea is that Ben is a very durable opponent, and because of his durability, and he's probably hard to hit outside of Jorge. It's not like he was getting pieced up in these other fights.
Right.
Okay, so he's durable. He's kind of hard to hit. Even if he isn't going to outstrike him in the beginning, he can get Jake exhausted enough where his striking ability will be able to create some wear and tear. And then later rounds, you think it adds. Because just what I've seen of his striking, I think Jake has fought, at least sparred guys that are bad. I know he's sparred guys that are like actually, you know, legit boxers. He's been in there with guys that can box. I mean, he's getting trained by a guy right now. Not BJ Flores. The guy is a Jaylian Love, right? Who used to be like a WBA champ. He was in Mayweather's camp. So like he's in there and he's in guys with, you know, guys that could bang. But I agree with you. It's different when you go into the deep waters, man.
That's what I think. I expect a lot of clinching from Ben, punching into the clinch, wrapping them up, having the ref break them up. Listen, Mike Tyson's the most dangerous guy on the planet. And back when he was the most dangerous striker in the world, and how many times, even when he's knocking a guy out in the first round, how many times does the ref have to come in and, hey, get out of it? And this is Ben, who's an expert at clinching. So I know Jake Paul knows how to fight. I mean, you've seen even with Nate Robinson, that was him. He was doing feints. He was making the guy react. Like, you've seen, all right, that guy's got some rounds in. This other guy's just running into shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Big difference between Nate Robinson and Ben Askren. And I'm not saying 100%. Ben Askren's, I'm just saying for the reasons I stated before.
The milliseconds, though, like the fact that Askren is a professional fighter. I mean, it's a different world, man. It's like, Jake Paul is training with a guy who's a very legit fighter, when you're locked in the ring with a guy who is a professional fighter, he's never been locked in there. That way, he was a professional fighter who's legitimately looking to hurt him and knock him out. I think Askren, again, Jake might have some great hands, but he's been in there with guys that have great hands. He's been in there with guys that have great everything.
With
he's been in there
with 4 ounce gloves, Jimmy, with 4 ounce gloves.
100%. But I think the fact that he is a professional fighter and has been hit by, again, a guy who's been hit by 4 ounce gloves and survived it. I think that I say second round at the latest.
Really?
Yep. 100%.
What was the other question? Well, that was the only question.
Well, my one final question is, do we ever see Colby and Kumaru go at it again?
Colby and Kumaru. Well, I mean,
they have a rematch.
Colby might have to face, I think he might be facing Masvidal, right?
Masvidal's the fight I would love to see, yeah.
That's going to be the fun money fight, but those guys know who's won that too, right? Like,
well, you never saw them really. You saw them wrestle a little bit, and Colby was messing with him. But I don't know, man. God, who knows? I mean, there's gym wars, and then there's this, you know, the fight night. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, both of them seem pretty confident in that, also. There's some intriguing matchups coming up.
I'd love to see Colby Kamara go out of the game. I say Kamara has to fight Gilbert Burns, and then say Colby fights Masvidal. I think he would have to beat. But then again, Masvidal just fought Kamara as well, so I don't know exactly what it would take for him to get that shot again. Sometimes if it's too close, all of a sudden to fight the same champion that he fought two or three fights ago is harder to pull off. Either somebody comes up from another division, or they take the number four guy and give him a shot. Just so it's not the same fight they're trying to sell. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tricky. Okay, then this is the last one. Is Conor done, and not by way of lack of skills, but by way of lack of interest?
You know, I mean, I think you can only be sailing around your lot so much. I think he is a fighter. I think he enjoys the fight game. I think I know the guy enjoys the attention. You'll see in the past, this fight nights, all of a sudden he's tweeting out stuff about this guy and Diego Sanchez. He likes the attention. Yep. He doesn't like what other people are getting. He wants the attention. It's fine. I think that he's such a young guy that we'll see him again. I really feel the Nate Diaz fight's the one to make. I think they're both coming off losses. They have that trilogy. They should now. I think they should be doing that fight, man. I really do. But that's me. You know.
It seems like Nate is trying to get a fight with Dustin, though.
Oh, is he? That's it.
He wants to fight the 170, doesn't he?
Yeah, like 165 or 170. He's like, let's fight over there, because he said everybody at 170 is a tomato can.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. He is. They're little boys. I'll let them grow up first.
I also think he's doing that to possibly entice Connor to take that fight for the trilogy. I think that they know that Connor's next fight, it can't be with Dustin. They just fought. Is going to be the Nate Diaz trilogy. Even though it's not the fight I would want to see, I'll watch it. And I think maybe Nate is trying to let Connor know, hey, there's other options here, pal, if you don't want to take it, which might cost Connor. That's a guess. But the money fight is with Connor for the third fight. And they'll probably do it at 170. Although, again, I've said 100 times to the point of ad nauseum, there's a lot of guys I want to see Connor fight more than Nate. I've seen that fight. It was great. I've seen two of them. They were great. Yeah. I don't need a third one. I'd rather see him fight Tony Ferguson. I would much rather see him fight Tony Ferguson. Not going to happen.
I want to know, because I'm going to be listening to him. I want to know, what's the difference between the Flagrant 2 and the Brilliant Idiots? Because I'm going to listen to both of your podcasts. And you only have two?
Yeah, just two. I need to work harder, bro.
That's enough, but I want to know, what's the difference?
Flagrant Idiots, yes.
Yeah, Flair. So, like, Brilliant Idiots, Flagrant I do with Charlamagne the God, and he's just a brilliant personality radio guy, but he's just the GOAT, man. He's amazing. And then Flagrant 2 I do with Akash Singh. He's a comic. And then Alex Media and Mark, also comic and producer. And it's just, we basically created the podcast at the time. I think this was a few years ago, just to, like, say all the things that we thought you weren't allowed to say in entertainment anymore. And just make all those jokes. And, like, that was the inception of it. It was like, let's be flagrant in this time where you can't at all. I mean, I'm sure Jim can talk ad nauseum about all the things that you can no longer say, you're not supposed to say. And, like, you know, so it was a really cool thing. And then it really just became just a hang, man. I think that's really what it is. So it's, you know, we're not trying to, like, reinvent the wheel over here. I wish I could probably give you a better pitch, but it's one of those things where you just kind of, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't want to sell it really. It's just, if you get involved in the flagrancy, then you get involved in the flagrancy. And that's just what we're about, man.
Oh, shit. You know how dumb I am, Matt? I know Andrew a long time, and I've never heard the podcast. I literally thought Flagrant 2 was a basketball or because of a flagrant foul.
For some reason, I
thought that was a sports podcast.
Yeah, it used to be a sports podcast.
And then I realized
I didn't want to, like, have to talk about sports every week.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I was reading articles about, like, golf, and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I just want to bust balls with my friends, and sometimes it's about sports, sometimes about MMA, sometimes about politics, sometimes it is. But for us, it's just about the joke. That is, what is the joke? What is the funny take on this topic? Like, I don't really care about the facts. Like, we have a whole thing where we're just like, feelings, no facts. I don't even want to know any facts.
Yeah.
Just tell me how you feel about this right here. So that's what we've been trying to cook up over here.
So to wrap up, because Andrew, you've given us a lot of time, man. I love you. And by the way, your special was good, man. It was really fucking good. It was in 4 parts. It's on Netflix. Andrew Schultz Saves America. And it was everything you want. It was completely not a woke culture special. If you're a woke person, you might enjoy it if you enjoy humor that goes against what you believe. Really funny, man. And the fact that you didn't do it in a way that wouldn't get you in trouble. You did exactly what you wanted to do.
We just did what we wanted to do. And, like, we also tried to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, when I was doing those pieces, I really did care about, like, the truth. And, like, Mark, who's in the room with me now, wrote it with me, and Alex, who directed it, was in the room with me. And, like, when we put these together, we were like, okay, let's try to be right. We can't go out and do comedy. When I go out and I do stand up, I don't care if it's right or wrong. I just care if it makes comedic sense. Okay. I have a joke back in the day, which was, you know, it's, you know, treating women poorly is horrible, but it produces the best food. And I would just go through all these cultures that like are notoriously sexist and they make amazing food. And the ones that like are very equal have horrible food. Right. It's not true, but it's funny.
It's funny.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's for me, that's the most exciting part of the joke is finding some crazy justification for something that's wrong. Right. But when we did this special, we're like, let's try to get it right. Let's be accurate. Let's be fair to both sides. Let's be accurate and let's be truthful and do fucking research and really create something that's fair to the left and fair to the right and makes sense of the world for most of us. And we put it out. And for the first time in my career, there's all these blogs like, this is racist to Asians. I'm like, the fuck did we work so fucking hard for? If you want racist jokes for Asians, we could do that easily. We don't have to do all this research. So it's just fucking drove me crazy, man. Like the one time where we're actually trying to be fair, we get all these blogs written about it. Like, yeah, Jesus Christ.
I think people like you say, complain about something, man. I really do.
They want to complain. Andrew, I love you, man. And you're great. And I'm happy for how well you're doing. Flagrant 2 and Brilliant Idiots are the podcast and on Netflix. Andrew Schultz Saves America, 4 parts. Really, really well-written, well-structured. Very unique special, and I'm happy for you, man.
Thank you so much. I love you, man. And hey, Matt, it was great to meet you, dude. I've been a fan for a while, so it was really cool to sit down and talk. And I do want to try some jujitsu, man. So if you're down in Miami or anything like that, or you got anybody you recommend, I'd love to roll.
100%. Do you have any relatives in New York? Are you coming back to visit at all?
Yeah. I mean, all my family's back there and stuff, so we'll be back there. So
I'm gonna get you my number. I'm in Long Island. I got a school in Huntington, Long Island.
Oh yeah.
Is it open now? It may
who
be.
Knows?
We might
who
be
knows?
Like Fight Club. I don't know. We don't talk about it. But listen, you come to town, Jimmy will get you my number. Call me up. I want to give you your first lesson.
I would
You'll
love
be strangling to strangling me. It's all good.
My folks had a house in Fire Island, and there's a whole different type of jujitsu that goes on out there. So
Jimmy does that.
Yeah. Jimmy does.
Jimmy's a fucking red belt. Jimmy's a red belt in that.
Yes. It's where you don't tap when you're being choked. Yeah.
All right, the gear comes with a fucking ball in your mouth. But anyway. Like Pulp Fiction. Andrew, so nice to meet you, man.
Good seeing you, man.
Nice to meet you guys. Peace, man. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, take care, brother.
Jimmy, I like him.
Oh, he's great, dude. And that's the guy he is. He's a very genuine guy. There's no bullshit with him. I knew you guys would get along. I'm always happy when my friends get along.
I think I got a new friend.
Yeah. I'll make sure I give him your number, too.
Definitely do that. I love
yeah, yeah.
Do you want to really quick go over this picks?
Yeah, let's go over our picks.
Card, because I'll tell you right now, this has been a great show.
Yeah.
You said, yeah.
No, I'm thinking. You're right. It has been. Now, let's start first fight, Maki Pitolo against Julian Marquez. Now, Pitolo's 1-3 in the UFC. Marquez 1-1. And he's also, Pitolo's coming off a 2-fight. Castagnani, he has lost to, and also Stewart, decision and a submission. He's coming off a couple of losses.
Submission, Marquez, second round. Sorry.
Yeah, you know what, Matt? I'm going to go exactly with that. That's exactly what I'm going to go with, except I'll go third. I don't want to be the exact same. So I'll go third.
Awesome, bro.
Now, Gastelum Heinisch, interesting fight.
Wow.
It is hard to bet against Ian Heinisch.
I'm telling you right now, I watched him versus Shoeface the other day. Talk about a comeback.
I know Shoeface, by the way, out of the UFC. So
is he?
You no longer. Yep. No, I guess they had to make some.
Well, Jimmy, if the shoe fits. Jimmy, so I love you so much, Jeff. Jimmy, I'm sorry. Jimmy,
just don't be sorry.
Don't, let's just keep going. Okay. Don't even acknowledge. Let me tell you, I'm quick. Bang bang, Jimmy. I'm gonna take Ian Heinisch. Because I think this guy's on a man on a mission, even though Kelvin, I love Kelvin, I really do. But Ian's been through so much shit. He's like, yo, I'm just coming to wreck everyone. And he's just looking like a beast lately. And, You know, I mean, he's coming off that win at the off of Gerald Mershot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just think this guy's trying to make a statement. I'm going to say Ian Heinisch by decision.
Yeah, Gastelum has lost three straight fights. Does he lose four straight again? Maybe. Let me see what Ian Heinisch has done in his last couple, because I'm probably going to take Heinisch as well. Well, he had lost two at once, then he beat Mershart. I am going to take him by a third round stoppage.
Listen, that's very ballsy.
Yeah,
yep, this is very, this is a great fight. Macy Barber, the return of Macy Barber.
Alexa Grasso, yeah.
3-1 in the UFC. And Alexa Grasso, don't let that 4-3 UFC record fool you. She's a well-rounded girl, very well-rounded. This is what I'm going to say. I really like Macy Barber. This is a tough comeback fight for her. Yeah. I think I'm going to take Alexa Grasso.
How does Barber respond to her first loss too? Everyone thought Mataferi was going to be, that she was going to run through Roxanne Mataferi, and she did not. I am going to take Macy Barber. I'll take Macy Barber by decision.
I'll take Grasso by decision, my friend.
Okay.
Now, this is the Jimmy.
That's the co-main.
Jimmy, this is the main event now. Hold on. Let me do the... That's such a weak fucking drum.
No, no, it's okay.
But I'm going to... This is really hard for me because I really, really, really think Kamaru Usman is just such a savage, you know? He's classy, he's technical. But Gilbert Burns has been looking... I feel like if this hits the floor, I feel it's going to be impossible for... I think we're going to see something out of Gilbert where we're going to see nonstop attacking. I don't think Kamaru is going to be able to maybe hold him down, and especially for five rounds. Gilbert has been showing no sign of slowing down. But again, Kamaru, I don't remember that guy even losing a round lately at all. And look what he's done. This is so... Jimmy, you go first. That's all I got to say.
I am, Gilbert is such a powerful... you look at some people that Gilbert has beaten, very impressive. But Kamaru has went through Jorge. He went through Covington. He went through Woodley, RDA, Damian Maya. It's really hard to bet against Kamaru Usman, but he's had a lot of decisions. I don't think every fight's going to be a decision. I am taking Kamaru Usman, fourth round stoppage.
I'm taking the same thing, but for Gilbert. And that's hard for me to do because I love Kamaru.
I do too.
But guys, we know what we always say. I have a family. I got to make picks. I'm going to say Gilbert Burns because in my heart, I'm a jiu-jitsu man.
Yes, you are.
You know what I'm saying, Jimmy?
Yeah.
Jimmy, if I had 1.2 million fucking followers, I'd be wearing Keds in a fucking handkerchief.
That's great. Yeah, he doesn't care. He doesn't give a fuck.
I like him. He's a likable guy.
He's a great guy. Yeah, and he really is that easygoing, and like he's just a funny guy. And he's a very funny actor too. I've done a show him and a comedian named Chris DiStefano had many years ago. I forget what it was called, but there was about a hockey team, and he's a solid actor.
Jimmy, you know that this is a packed card, and we'll promote when exactly this is going on.
Sure. Right?
You know, the early prelims, the headline in that is Ricky Simone versus Brian Kelleher.
I know.
That's the early prelims. And then the prelims, what about that? Pollyanna Viana, it means no worries, is fighting Mallory Martin.
Mallory Martin. Bilal Muhammad, Diego Lima.
Oh, my goodness. I love Bilal Muhammad.
Rodolfo Vieira against Anthony Hernandez, and then Jim Miller, Bobby Green is the main fight of the prelims. Crazy.
You know what I love?
Me?
Yes. You know what else I love? Saturdays when his fight's on.
I love it,
Jimmy.
Good pay-per-view. I know what I'm doing this Saturday.
I know what I'm doing too, Jimmy. I get a nice workout in. I've been attacking my wife like every night.
Good.
My libido is fucking nuts.
I would hope so.
And my wife, she we have a good time.
You're a stud.
I don't know why I said that, because I looked to my right and that's my bed.
Yep.
So I beat my chest.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, Jimmy. We could always cut that out. So anyway, Jimmy, I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Yes.
And I had a blast. Me and you are both on Cameo, and so is Chip. You're not on the app. We know that.
Nope. But you can go to Chip Chipperson's Twitter, and I have a link tree up with all the links. So if you want to get a cameo from Chip, go to Chip's Instagram or Twitter, and all of the links are in there for everything Chip.
I don't know what that is, but I want a link tree.
Honestly. Nope.
Listen to me, Jimmy. Jimmy, I love you, my little bird.
Yeah, I love you, pal.
Talk to you soon. And everybody, the fights are this weekend. Proper plug. Proper plug.
Sorry. 10 p.m. Yes. Saturday night, the main card starts. The prelims are earlier. I believe the prelims. Hold on now. Let daddy check.
Yeah, it's
prelims start early. Prelims 6:15. Prelims 8 p.m. Watch the whole night. It's going to be incredible. Thank you to Andrew Schultz. We will talk to you soon.
Bye, Jimmy.
Goodbye, buddy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.